The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And as you've been hearing over the last few days, Ukraine made a surprise incursion into Russian territory. President Volodymyr Zelensky broke silence and confirmed the attacks in his nightly address on Saturday. The incursion has moved into its sixth day, and with us now to talk about it is Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, first of all, the extent of this military occupation, I mean, details are scant and many of the images have actually come from the Russian side.
They have. I think the Ukrainians have been playing it pretty close to their chest, not wanting to reveal too much until they'd really established forces comfortably within Russian territory. It now looks like they've actually put in some of their frontline troops from two or three different brigades, and it's probably in the low thousands have been put in. I think what they were doing was probing the Russian defences, so to speak, seeing how strong they were in a sector which has seen very little direct intervention. And then if they weren't as strong as feared, they would then sort of move rapidly and take Russian territory. And I think that is what is happening. And the indications are there are probably maybe 2,000 to 3,000 Ukrainian troops involved, but they're some of their elite troops, and that's the key thing. Whereas on the Russian side, as far as we can tell, the people who were protecting the border on the Russian side were either conscripts or reservists, not hugely experienced combat troops.
No.
I think this is why the Ukrainians have made the rapid gains. Yeah.
What was the strategic target that they were aiming for?
I don't think there was one strategic target. I don't think they were ever expecting to reach the city of Kursk, which is still probably beyond their reach. But the point is that if you look at the larger map, almost all the activity has been in the east and the southeast. There's a long stretch of the 1,000-kilometer common border, which has been quiet almost since 2 or 3 months into the two-and-a-half-year war. And essentially, neither side has been sort of looking to develop that. The Russians have assumed that the Ukrainians weren't able to, that they didn't have the capability. So the Russian strategy, so to speak, was to concentrate on the areas of strength and not expect problems elsewhere. And I think what has happened is the Ukrainians have caught them by surprise and shown that they can actually undermine this strategic approach that the Russians have. And that, I think, is what is significant about what has happened so far.
Now, they have pushed 70,000 people into fleeing, which is a significant number of people. And you can't keep word of that quiet from the general Russian population. So they know there is something of an emergency in Kursk.
Yes, they do know that. And in fact, Putin has been fairly clear on national television that this is an unexpected problem and a real annoyance from his perspective because it undermines their policy. I think the thing we always have to remember that in a real sense, this is a war which neither side can win. If the Ukrainians were winning very well, which is highly unlikely at present, then the Russians could always threaten to escalate. But if Russia suddenly made a huge breakthrough, there's far too much relying on this for NATO's own prestige, for NATO to allow that to happen. So this is a war which has to be ended at the negotiating table at some stage. And it may be what the Ukrainians are trying to do now is to show that they have capabilities which the Russians haven't recognized. And that might mean just possibly during the winter months when things are relatively quieter, there may be sort of back-channel meetings and the possibility, just that, of negotiations. Mm. And that may well be part of the Ukraine strategy.
Do you believe the Ukrainians will try to stay there, or was this a demonstration of what they could do, particularly given that they have access to more sophisticated Western weaponry?
I think it is much more likely to be highly symbolic. You can't be sure, and they may actually try to stay at least on some territory, maybe easily defensible territory, very close to Ukrainian territory. You can't be sure about that, but I think this is really symbolic. It's to show to the Russians and very much to the Western countries, European NATO members in particular, Ukraine can actually do this because the impression has been given that they're being pushed back constantly by the Russians. That's not entirely true. There's an element of truth in that. And I think that changes that perspective. So in some ways, there's a huge amount resting on this. in terms of the potential to have an impact on public opinion in the West. And I think that's one thing we have to factor in. But in answer to your question, I think it's unlikely they will stay there for any length of time, nor even try to.
They did succeed in destroying convoys of Russian troops and weaponry. I'm wondering, moving into that area, does it give them access, using whatever missiles there are at their disposal, to perhaps target Russian air fields and other assets that they may have that conduct attacks on Ukraine?
That's possible, but I mean, the point is it would be a question of moving anti-aircraft equipment, maybe 20, 30 kilometers maximum in towards Russian territory. And while that may extend the range somewhat, what it would also do would be to bring those very facilities within range of artillery, Russian artillery. So I think it's unlikely they would do that to any extent. I think they will stick with what they can do now and still try and argue with Western countries that better supplies have to come through.
The fire that has been set, it would appear, by the Russians at the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, one of the cooling towers, there's a fire associated with it. There's not thought to be any danger of a nuclear spillage of any kind. But at the same time, it's been characterized by the Ukrainians as an attempt to blackmail them and indeed Europe.
That's possible. I mean, the report which I read an hour or so ago was that what had happened was that somebody unknown, presumably Russian soldiers, had put a load of tires into one of the cooling towers and set them on fire, which produces a huge amount of smoke and looks incredibly bad, but probably is not that serious, in fact. In other words, this is true symbolism to remind people and to have exactly that effect that you mentioned, to give the impression that something much worse is happening than is actually the case. If that is true, then from the Russian side, they're playing this symbolism game as well. And it will have some effect, but not a great effect to people who recognize what's going on.
Now, we've talked about Gaza and Israel in the context of the US presidential election. How do you think that this current move by Ukraine is going to impact or be impacted by that US presidential election?
That is difficult to say because the election is so much up in the air. I mean, the whole tenor of it is changing almost day by day. And surprisingly, it is Trump who seems to be on the back foot, quite unexpectedly. So I think for the moment, there is obviously on the Republican side opposition to continuing to pour money into supporting Ukraine. Now, if the Ukrainians are showing that they can do this, that they can go into Russian territory, to some extent that undermines that. So on balance, and I don't think it's a big thing, it probably is more useful to the Democrats than the Republicans in crude parliamentary, election terms. But it's early days for that. And I think we'll see. I rather suspect that this whole incident will probably decline over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And the Ukrainians will show what they've done and show they can do it again, and made life more difficult for the Russians, who are going to have more vigorous border defences along much more of that 1,000-kilometre border than they expected they would have to do.
Finally, the prospect of peace, and eventually you get peace, whether it comes from a victory or a capitulation. Vladimir Zelensky is being painted as almost a Churchillian figure in the Ukrainian narrative. Can he afford to preside over a loss permanently of territory to Russia?
He probably can, but one has to remember that Zelensky has the other problem of a government more generally, which is pretty notable for its corruption. And I mean, you'll have to remember that he won the elections not several years ago, really, on a counter-corruption thing. And that is one of the worries for NATO. I would think that there is a lot of realism among many circles in Ukraine, even so, that they're going to have to accept some degree of compromise. In fact, the real issue is whether the Russians will as well. At some stage, that has to happen. I mean, we're now, 2.5 years into a war which has seen a huge amount of damage and many thousands of people killed, especially on the Russian side, but also Ukrainians as well. At some stage, it has to end. And I think much of that will depend, in fact, on the result of the next American election. And if Trump was to get in, which perhaps not quite so likely as it was 3 weeks ago, then you might see a pretty, almost the Ukrainians told from Washington that they have to accept a degree of Russian occupation, a part of what they really do consider their territory. But for the moment, I think it's very difficult to tell what will come out of that.
Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.